It's on now? All this conversation is being recorded?
Yes, it's all being recorded.
Oh, good Lord. Jay Baba, this is Ron O'Gailey speaking, and I'm going to tell you how I met Baba and a variety of incidents in life with Baba. But prior to talking about life with Baba, I would like to say that I hope you will bear with me, because I am not a speaker, as speakers are. My first experience of talking at all to an audience has happened only after Baba dropped his body. In my youth, the idea of getting up and speaking gave me stage fright. And after I came to Baba, I was only background. And when I occasionally would come up with an opinion of sorts at the wrong time, Baba would tell me to sew it up. So, having sewed up the lips for many years, it was quite a task to unsew them and talk to you all. So, here goes. I first heard about Baba in 1933 while I was in Paris. It happened apparently by chance, but with Baba nothing is by chance, which I discovered later. And I and my mother Nani and Ruano Bogislav were walking down a street in Paris when I heard a man's voice behind us calling Frida, Frida. Frida having been Ruano's name when she was young. And this kept on for such a while, and Nani and Ruano were so busy talking they never heard it. So I suggested that Ruano turn around and see if it might be for her. And sure enough, it happened to be Quentin Todd, who was a great friend of hers. And he had just come back from Paris, from India, and he was in Paris looking for Ruano. And as I say, it seemed by chance that we met. So that evening, we went up to Ruano's apartment, and he told us all about his experience of having been in India and having met Baba, who was a perfect master, and how wonderful he was, and showed us photos of Baba. And I was interested, but being an undemonstrative sort of person, I naturally was slow to react and decided that, well, if I was going to be at all interested, I would have to first meet Baba. My mother, in the meantime, while she was looking at the picture, said, but I've seen that man's face before. And it happened that about the year before, when Baba had been in America, she had seen a photo of him in the newspaper, but there was no caption. And she had never told us that she'd seen this photo of Baba, but to herself she had said, someday I'm going to meet that man. So naturally her recognition was almost instantaneous. Mine was a slow reaction. So that summer we were going, my mother and I, back to America to visit my family. And so we said, if we hear about Baba again, you just let us know. So while we were in America, our friend Ruano wrote us to say that Baba had come to Portofino. And Quentin had asked Baba whether he could bring Ruano down there to meet him, and Baba had said yes. So she wrote a long letter with much enthusiasm and glowing accounts of having met Baba.
Ruano
did. But what almost finished me was that she said that after meeting Baba, she spent 10 days weeping. Well, I said, this is too fantastic. I mean, to meet somebody and then weep for 10 days, well, what is this? It's so silly. But she said, I've told Baba about you both, that is Nani and me, and Baba's coming to England in the autumn, and he wants you to come to London to meet him. So we made preparations to get to London to meet Baba. Now, this is a very sort of weaving in and out of almost missing Baba, and yet somehow we had to meet him. The very last day before we were sailing, we got a cable saying Baba will be in London and not in Paris, because prior to that we were not quite sure which place he was going to be in. And it happened that our boat, who was going to stop at the two ports in France and England, had canceled the French port. So anyway, we had to go to England. Then the boat was very slow in crossing, stopping at different stops and doing certain... And Nani got quite frantic, and I said, look, if we're going to meet Baba, we're going to meet Baba. We can't push the boat any faster, so we just might as well relax until we get there. Before reaching England, we sent a radio, radiogram to Ruano to meet us at the station in London. We arrived there, no Ruano. Where's Baba in the whole of London? Where to find him? Nani started to panic again. I said, look, we're going to the hotel. We have a telephone number where we can get in touch with Ruano. So let's do that. So as soon as I phoned this number, which was the English-speaking union, they immediately gave me her phone number. The first person to answer the phone at the hotel where she was Ruano. Where are you? In Paris? I said, heavens no, well, we're in London, and why didn't you come to meet us at the station? Well, I never got your message. And I said, what makes you think we're in Paris? And she said, well, this morning, she said, when I called up, because she hadn't left her number at where she was, and she used to phone every day to find out if there was any message. And they told her that there had been a phone call from Paris. And she, thinking that by chance we had gone to Paris instead of London, immediately left her phone number. I come along, get the phone, and get her on the phone. So she went to inquire, and Baba said he would see us that afternoon about 4 o'clock. Then I started getting butterflies. Now that I was actually going to come face to face with Baba, I almost panicked. Because what did I know about a perfect master? I'd never read any spiritual books. I'd never been seeking anything. And Baba was silent. So how do you talk with somebody who's silent? I mean, all these things were going in my mind. How am I going to meet Baba? Anyway, the time came to meet Baba. We went to the hotel. And the first people we met at the hotel were the English group that were there that Baba had already gathered to him. And then we sat and talked for a little while. And then Norina came down with the message that Baba was tired and he wouldn't be able to see us that day. And I had the feeling of being reprieved. I sort of relaxed, you see. We sat around and talked a little while, and then the next thing we knew, another message came. That we had come on such a long journey to see Baba, and so Baba would see us that day, but only just to see him, not to have an interview or talk. So Nani was taken up first to see Baba, and I was left to cool my heels out in the hall, which didn't add to things. And at last, I was told to come into the room. And that was, well, I suppose you'd say the experience of a lifetime. Because I, to this day, wouldn't know who was in the room besides Baba. I mean, I knew the room was full of people, sort of hazy figures. But the one outstanding person was Baba sitting there with the most beautiful expression I've ever seen on anybody's face. Sweetness, love, everything that was beautiful was there. And I don't know what I did. I think I probably just gawked at Baba. And because, after all, Westerners didn't have that habit of folding their hands before a master, and I probably just stood there. And somehow somebody removed me from the room, I remember. And
how long was that? Was that about?
I don't know. Time didn't exist. I saw Baba, and how long I stood there and looked at him, I don't know. All I know is I found myself out in the hall. And somehow or other, all night long, that image of Baba was hooked. I kept sort of seeing it in my mind's eye. And I said, oh, well, Rano, you've never been looking for anything. You've never thought about anything like this, but somehow or other, Baba seems to be the answer to everything. And I felt very bewildered about it all. And, I mean, it was still a state of confusion. I mean, I couldn't sort things out. And Baba told us, or sent the message, that the next day we were to have an interview with him. So then again, that made me nervous. So we had found that there would be two little rooms there, vacant rooms in the hotel still. So from the hotel we were staying at, we moved over so we could be nearer to Baba. Now, as I say, I wasn't a demonstrative person, And I did something that day which was most extraordinary. We arrived at the hotel. I was paying off the taxi, and a flower vendor, one of the street vendors with a pushcart, came along with huge bouquets of chrysanthemums. Very, long, about 3-foot stems. And I just bought an armload from him and walked into the hotel. Suddenly I saw this flowers. I said to Ruana, what am I doing with these? She said, you bought them for Baba. I said, oh, have I? Oh, I say, I think there's much too many for Baba. I'll give half to Nani and keep half for Baba. Well, that was settled. Then again, Nani was taken in first to see Baba. And I was made to cool my heels out in the hall. I sat on the steps. It was one of those funny old-fashioned hotels with stairs. And clutching my chrysanthemums to me, getting more wilted by the minute. But last, I was called in. And I came in. And instead of gracefully handing Baba the flowers, I just dumped them in his lap. And the Baba said, sit down next to me. And gestured. So I sat. Then I was so shy that I just couldn't look at Baba. I would, out of my corner of my eye, I would look and see, is Baba looking that way? Yes. And I would get a good look at him. And when he turned my way, I'd be looking up the other direction. Oh, dear. So by the whole time, the Baba was there in London. We stayed there, and whenever we'd see Baba going to the theater or anything with some of the group, because we were still kind of outsiders, and just the close ones were really sort of going with Baba. But still, Baba gave us permission to tag along. And so we saw him for those, it must have been about a week Baba still was there before he returned to India. Now, during our stay, one day, I saw Quentin Todd and Ruano in a huddle on the stair landing. I said, what are you two doing? He said, we have to ask something of Nani, and we don't know how to do it. I said, what? Well, there's a pastel drawing of Baba that somebody has done, head size and shoulders. And Baba says Nani is to buy it. Now, how can we tell her? Baba's given a stipulated amount that Nani should pay for it. And we don't know whether how to approach Nani about it. I said, well, just tell her. I said, she won't say anything. Why not, if this is what Baba wishes? You really think so? I said, of course, go ahead and ask her. So they went and asked, and they told her that it was just painting and so forth, and Baba wanted her to pay £2, some odd shillings and pence. She opened her purse and handed it to them and took it. So when Baba heard about it, he was very happy, and he embraced Nani. But the one stipulation was that wherever she went, even if she was away for only one night, she had to carry that picture with her. So she had a sack made for it with leather straps and all that with a handle. And then, of course, it was my job to always carry the picture. And we used to have all sorts of odd experiences throughout Europe with it afterwards, with these customs officials making comments as to who our relative was and all that sort of thing. So also, when we were in London, one thing Baba asked was that whether Nani and I and Ruana would come to India for his birthday. That was in 1934. Put it here that we'll come. So we each put our hand in his, promised that we would come. So then, as I say, Baba left England. So when we went back to Paris, we thought, well, we're going in February to see Baba. And winter's so cold in Paris. Why stay in Paris? Let's go down to Morocco. We'll spend the winter in Morocco, and then we'll get a boat in time to go through the Suez and on out to India. So we had a delightful winter in Morocco. Nani and Ruana used to hear from Baba all the time. And Baba, in his inimitable way, you see, would write to Nani, and how is your dear daughter? But he had never told me that I should write to him, so I didn't. And it sort of irked me, being this dear daughter. But still, he was just, slowly, slowly drawing me in. And so the time came to get ready to go to Tangiers to catch the boat coming through the Mediterranean. About 2 days before we were to leave, Baba sent us a cable, stay where you are or go to Paris, but don't come to India. So that was our first experience of Baba changing his mind after making us promise to come. So we took it in our stride, and that spring we went back to Paris, and then Baba sent word that he was coming to Europe. And he sent a cable that one of the three of us, that is Nani, Ruano, or myself, should come to meet him at Marseille. So we decided that Ruano was the most conversant with French ways and so forth, so she should be the one to go. And the morning that she was going down to get her ticket, Nani had asked me to cash a check at the bank, so I went with Ruano. And after I got the check cashed, it was burning a hole in my pocket. So I said to Ruano, "I'm also getting a ticket to Marseille." "Oh, but Baba said only one of us is to come." I said, "I'm not going for Baba." I said, "You need somebody to look after you and keep you company going down to Marseille, so for that reason I'm going." So I said, "I better phone Nani, because after all, I'm spending her money." And Nani, of course, remonstrated with me on the phone, and I gave her the same excuse and said, "Whatever you say is not going to make any difference. I'm going to Marseille." So we arrived in Marseille, and when we saw the boat that morning, we were allowed to come on board and go to Baba's cabin. And I started thinking, "Oh, gosh, now here am I, and I may be in for it." But in those days, Baba was still very lenient with those he was drawing to him. So when I told Baba I'm not really supposed to be here in Marseille, but I came to keep Ruano company, Baba smiled, patted me on the cheek, embraced me, and I knew it was okay. So we had a nice day with Baba in Marseille, and that night we had to go by train to Paris. And Baba, of course, always in those days used to travel third class.
Did Baba wear Western clothes?
And Baba wore Western clothes in those days. Always Western clothes, and always tucked his hair either in a beret or under a soft hat. So that, I mean, from the way Baba's hair was tucked up, you wouldn't have known that he had long hair.
And was Baba still striking in the Western clothes?
Yes, Baba was striking in the sense that, anyway, Baba's face always attracted people. Whereas, actually, in stature, Baba looked small in the Western clothes. In the sadra, sometimes Baba looks so gigantic. But in the Western clothes, you almost feel that, you know, you want to sort of take care of Baba. At least, maybe it's just because we felt close to Baba that we had that impression. But I know that when I've seen Baba walking on a station platform or in public somewhere, he always makes people turn and see and look at him. Somehow, or rather instinctively, people would turn and look at him. So, to go back to our trip, we got in third-class compartment. And fortunately, the train was not crowded, so there was an empty compartment next to Baba's for Ruano and me. Baba told us to go and go to sleep, stretch out. So, what with this hard bench and no pillow under the head, and we had to put our coats on because it was chilly, both Ruano and I started feeling very hungry. We couldn't sleep. So I said, "I know where there's something to eat, and that's in Baba's compartment." Ruano said, "How can we go in there?" I said, "I'll just pussyfoot in." And I said, "I know just where it is on the rack." And I said, "I'll do it so quietly, Baba won't know I've gone and gotten the food." So the train was lurching here and there, and the mandali were, some were sitting on the floor, some were sitting on the bench, and Baba was stretched out on one bench with a shawl over his head, as he was his custom. And I pussyfooted over, and just over the where Baba's feet were, was the where the box was. And Baba couldn't possibly have heard me, what with the noise of the train, and I hadn't made any noise, and I was very careful not to disturb any of the mandali so that they might be startled. And I was just reaching my hand up to bring that box of food down when Baba came out from under his shawl and said, "What are you doing here?" I said, "Baba, I'm so sorry. I'm sure I couldn't have disturbed you. Well, what are you doing here?" I said, "Ruano and I are so hungry we can't sleep." Then Baba got that sort of twinkle in his eye. He said, "All right, take the food and eat, but don't come back in this compartment again." "No, Baba." So Ruano and I had our fill and decided now we'd go and rest again. And just at that moment, Kaka came to the door of the compartment, and he had two little black velvet pillows, oh, say about a foot in diameter, I mean square. And he said one was for Ruano and one was for me. We should sleep well, keep our little pillows, and never part with them. So I still have my little pillow. So We got to Paris, and from there Baba went to England. And when Baba was coming back from England, he was going to spend 10 days in outside of Zurich at Hedy Merten's place. Hedy Merten's and her husband, Walter, were very devoted Baba lovers. And they had a beautiful place on the lake of Zurich, outside of Zurich, called Feldmeilen. And he was a landscape architect, so he's had all beautiful terraces there and all looking right down on the lake. So naturally, Baba came there with the Mundley and most of the English group. And we still, Manani and Ruan and I being newcomers, Baba had given us permission to be there the 10 days he was there. But we used to stay at a little tiny hotel called the Hotel Robin at the foot of the hill. We'd have our meals there, go up and spend the day, be with Baba at Hades' place, then again come for lunch, again in the afternoon, and again at the night time. And then I had this experience of knowing what Ruano meant by, after meeting Baba, she wept for 10 days. I didn't weep for 10 days, but I couldn't sleep for 10 days. Every night when I'd hear the others go off to sleep, then I'd get up and creep and sit by the window there and look out over the lake. And it was moonlight at the time, and it was so beautiful. And I'd say, what's happening to me? What's going on? What is this? I mean, I was just so restless. Everything inside was in a turmoil. I just couldn't pin it down to anything. And I thought, I don't know what Bob is doing to me, but this is terrible. And this went on for the whole 10 days that I was there in Feldmeilen. And outwardly, I mean, Baba was just very nonchalant with me, you see. He sort of, you know, just, I was just still Nani's daughter. And Baba knew how to play me on his line, you see. And so the more he acted like that, because the more close I was being drawn to him. So I had a beautiful experience there. One day we went walking in the hills with Baba. And I know that from seeing Baba films, you could see in those early days how Baba would stride out. And nobody could keep up with him, even the Mundley. So everybody was sort of straggling along, and Baba was going well on ahead. And I made up my mind that I was going to catch up with Baba and be near Baba. So I just put on a little extra speed, and I went walking very fast. And as I came up alongside of Baba, Baba put his hand out and took my hand. After that, I just floated up the hill. I wasn't breathless. I wasn't having to, you know, hurry to keep up with Baba. I was just up the hill. It was beautiful. It's such a clear picture still of that. So then, as Baba went down to Marseille, and he said a few of us would be able to come with him and see him off. And that is where I had my first experience of what Baba would be like if, you know, you weren't obeying him when you should. This is what I call the episode of the birds. We had gone out with Baba, and we passed by the bird market, and Baba said, I must buy some birds. So he bought several cages of what might say medium-sized birds, two or three. I think there were two in one cage and one in one, I forget now. Anyway, there were not more than two or three. And we brought the cages back, and they were kept in Quentin's room. Then the next day, Baba called us all to the room because Baba wanted to have the one bird change from his cage into the other cage. And Quentin was called to do the job. Quentin, being an Englishman and liking his cuppa, was in the bathroom making tea. Quentin was called once, Quentin was called twice, Quentin was still called. You could see Baba wasn't liking it. So Adi Jr., to sort of help matters, seeing that Baba was not very happy about the situation, and we all sort of felt helpless. We didn't know whether we should take some action or just do what we should do. So we just stood there. So Adi, to sort of break this strain, lean down and open the cage in order to take this bird out and transfer it to the other cage as Baba had wanted. So naturally, as soon as he put his hand into the cage, the bird gave him a nip. And withdrawing his hand, the bird flew out of the cage. None of us had noticed that the screening was open, so the bird nicely flew out to his freedom in the skies. And Baba's eyes were like thunder and lightning. That was my first experience of seeing Baba anything but that gentle, loving person. Actually, his eyes were shooting fire. By that time, Quentin had come out from the bathroom, and we all stood there wondering what's going to happen. And Baba said, "If this is the way, West's idea of obedience, you can all leave me. I don't want any of you. You can go back to the West." So even those of us who had not done anything were feeling just as guilty as Quentin must have felt. And we just stood there, just paralyzed. Oh, I mean, how could it end like this? I mean, it's just not possible. So after Baba let us simmer in that way and feel his displeasure, then he forgave Quentin, and we were all forgiven and embraced. Everything was as if nothing had happened. It was all smoothed over. Because with Baba, I mean, once some situation is over, then it's over. And we also should not harbor it. So Baba said, "Now we'll go and take these cages back and return these birds and buy some other birds." And they were those little tiny island birds, as they call them. And they were put in a big cage, and Kaka had charge of them on the boat. And when we came to Nasik that time, they were there in Nasik, and Ruana looked after them there.
Did Baba say anything special work with these birds?
They must have, obviously. Or it was a test for Quentin as to his sense of obedience to come when Baba called. I mean, those sort of things Baba never explained, and we never asked. Because if we had asked, Baba would have probably given, as he often did, an explanation that would make you happy, but possibly was not the real explanation. So most of the time, especially in a thing like that, we would not have said, "Oh, well, Baba, what were you doing working with the birds, or what were you doing?" Because he would not have told us. But we assumed that must be what Baba was doing. Either a test of some kind to show us that when Baba wished something done, obedience should be, and Quentin happened to be the one who had to be the scapegoat, as it were. Or maybe Baba was working, and Quentin gummed the works by not doing it, and Adi came in when he shouldn't have to. And so that sort of thing we would never know. And my next contact with Baba was when he cabled us from India in 1934, that he was going to America, that Ruana should rent the apartment, and the three of us should travel to America with him. So Baba came to Paris. From Paris, he went to London. And then he said his boat leaving Southampton would also touch at Cherbourg. We should get on at Cherbourg to join him, and then we would travel. So we traveled for 10 days in the Atlantic with Baba, in the middle of winter with waves going over the top of the boat, so you couldn't go out on deck. And I'm usually a fairly good sailor, but I think even that would have gotten me under. But Baba's had other ideas, because every morning I had to go and play table tennis with him up on deck, you know, inside. And Baba never played table tennis in the regular sense of the word. He would just swat balls as hard as he could at you across the table, and you had to be alert and return them. Whatever Baba's working was, he must have been working strenuously at that time with the force of the action that Baba gave to the balls. And just as suddenly as Baba would begin a game or playing, just as suddenly he would stop and say, "Now, finished, that's all." So at that time, I'd been doing a lot of thinking. Here we are with Baba and all that. And I said to Baba one morning, I said, "Baba, now I know why all the things that I hoped would happen didn't happen. because somehow or other I feel if any one of them had, I would not have come to you. My life would have gone in one direction. I would have been satisfied with what I was doing. And I probably would not have made the effort to come and be with you. Bobby said, no, it had to be because you had to come to me. So, of course, I was quite satisfied over that. Then in Baba then had several receptions for him in New York at that time. And then we left for California.
You were traveling with Baba?
Oh, and I was traveling with Baba, but we didn't stay with Baba at the hotel. I stayed with my family. And Baba said, you be with them for a few days. You just come down in the morning, say good morning, and then the rest of the day is yours. So for about 2 or 3 days, we were in New York. And then we went out to California with Baba. And that's where Garrett Fort and Malcolm Schloss Jean, at that time she was Mrs. Schloss, later became Jean Adriel, were waiting for us. They had a house for us and everything when Baba was there. At that time, Baba did a lot of contacting people in the movie world that were more like writers, not so much actors. And at that time, also, he was keeping Gabriel Pascal in reserve there, that if he became a, if there was any scenario that he liked, that he approved of, then there was the possibility that Pascal would be directing it and all.
Did Baba want a movie or what?
He wanted a movie. Well, not so much on himself, but sort of symbolizing Baba, in incorporating Baba's qualities. I think something like that. You know that one book story they wrote, This Man David, gives you some idea of, but it still was not forceful enough. Because Baba himself wasn't going to be in it. But Baba had something. I actually, you see, I never was in on any of those sessions, so I only got sort of hearsay of what was happening. But I got the impression that Baba wanted something very forceful, and he never got what he wanted, and or whether he was just a way of his, of doing his internal work by using this particular vehicle in which to do it. It's quite possible. Because actually nothing ever came of it. And Pascal always had hopes that he would be doing something for Baba. But then later on he died, and nothing was done. I think at that time anyway, it probably was not the right time for it. Baba's following at that time was still very small, and they probably wouldn't have understood the spirituality or the symbolism of the whole thing if Baba had gotten the right. If Baba had wanted the right story, he would have found the right writer to do it. That's why we ourselves always felt that Baba was just using that as a vehicle of work, like he did so many other things. So Baba then returned to India. And we used to hear from him occasionally.
What were his last orders to you, just to...
My last orders was to go back to New York, and which is the last place I wanted to go. I wanted to stay in California, which was winter. I thought it would be nice. I had friends and relations in California. I'd enjoy myself there. When spring came, I could go back to New York. And, I'll do something when I get there. No, you've got to get back as soon as I leave. You all celebrate my birthday here, and then you disperse, and Lonnie and I were to go back to New York. Noreen and Elizabeth for a while were to stay in California, and Minta was also with us at that time. She came back to New York with us, and the others were dispersed there in California that lived there. And then when I got back to New York here, I was finding time heavy on my hands. Now, if I'd even had an inkling that there was a possibility that I'd ever be going to India or something like that, it just never entered into my head. Or I probably would have gone to some language school and learned some of these Indian languages. Never entered my head. And even though Baba had invited us that time to go for his birthday, but that was just a passing thing, you see. Thought of living here or anything, I mean, Baba had never mentioned it. And so I found time hanging on heavy on my hands, so I thought, well, I won't take a full-time job, but I'll get a part-time job. But we'd arrived at this stage there where we couldn't do anything really without informing Baba. So I wrote to Baba. I said, I'm twiddling my thumbs, and I just don't want to just sort of paint haphazardly. I'd like to get a job, even if it's only a part-time job. Baba's letter comes back to me and says, keep ready for my work, and you're not to do anything. So, keep ready for my work. I just sat around and twiddled my thumbs for a few months till I went up to the country in the summer. And then, of course, in the summer, you always got sports and swimming and all that keeps you occupied. Then that summer, no, 34, that was 35, 30, summer of 36, we get a letter saying that Baba is going to have this Western ashram in Nasik, and that he has selected a certain number from America and a certain number from England, and we were to be in what he called the Western ashram in Nasik. So would we come? So Nani and I said yes. So Narina and Elizabeth were also to come from the West, and Jean and Malcolm, and Ruano. Ruano at that time was living in California. And who else was from America? Garrett Fort. And Nadine Tolstoy. And the others were all from England. There was Jean, Will and Mary Backett, Kitty, Delia, Margaret, and...
Herbert, was he at this
time? No, Herbert wasn't there. Herbert had left Baba by then. I forget the other boy's name. The English boy. Can't think of it now. And we were to go first to England. Baba would be in England, see us, give us our instructions, and then he would go back to India, and we should follow. So we had to be in England, I think, by the beginning of November. And we saw Baba for a few days. Baba told us we should not get to India before a certain date. And we should bring linen and blankets and things like that for our bedding. And other general sort of things he told us. But we should not be in India. So we arranged that there would be a certain boy leaving Marseille by a certain date. And so Elizabeth was taking her car. So she and Narina motored down. Nani and I broke the journey in Paris and then went on by train down to Marseille. We all met and took this boat, and Jean and Malcolm and the six of us went by boat out to India. Now, having had that first experience of being told at the last minute, stay where you are, but don't come to India, Nani and I were very fearful when we got on the boat that there'd be a cable at the last minute telling us not to come. There's nothing in Marseille. We got to Port Said. At Port Said, we bought these, you know, those leather poofs that you sit on, and mirrors, and a pith helmet for the sun, and flashlights. We didn't know what to expect. We didn't know whether we were going to camp when we got here, or whether we're going to have a house to live in, or anything. So we thought we'd better take these odds and ends. Baba told us to bring the bedding. And so we got to Port Said. We left Port Said, no cable. And I think the next stop was Aden. That was all right, no cable. Then the last stop was to be Karachi. We got to Karachi. Nervous, no cable. We left. Now I'm sure it's okay. We reached Bombay. This time Baba really means for us to come. So then we arrived, and I remember, I think there was a lot of the Dadachanji family that met us at that time, and Rustam, Adi's brother, and he had, just Rustam. Then he had instructions to take us to the American consulate so we'd sign up there and sightsee around Bombay. I mean, here we were, but tossing on this boat all these days. We had to go and do all this sightseeing around Bombay. And then that night we had to go to the movies. Baba said we had to go to the movies. We all wanted to go to bed.
Where was Baba at this time?
Baba was in Maribor. and said we had to go to the movies. So the next day after that, well, then we were motoring on up, and Nazi ashram wasn't ready yet. So we went to stay first one night in a place called Igat Puri, and then after that we went to Bandadra, where we stayed, I think it must have been a week or so. And from there, Bobby took us one day to see Nasik, then we came back, and then after a few days, so that we were about the, might say, before the end of December, we were there, settled in Nasik, and the English group came about the day before Christmas, so we were all there together at Christmas. And at Bandadra, or was it Igat Puri anyway, one of those two places, Baba came and met us there. And that time he, of course, had his sadra on, and we'd always have been used to seeing him just in his business suit, you know, in the West, or when he was being in the house, he would have on his sadra and lenga, but then he used to have a sort of dressing gown over it, because afterwards it was chilly there in the West. So this way we saw Baba's natural self, you know, with just the white pants and the sadra and that old red coat of his, which was just those days Baba used to read his own mail and not have it read to him, and his pockets would be bulging like this. He used to call it his post office because he kept all the letters and everything in it. So Baba, with great pleasure, took us over to Nasik to see, and we just were floored because everything was just done so perfect. I mean, according to Western standards and convenience and everything. The main house, I mean, there was a big double room for Narina and Elizabeth with a bath. And there was two small rooms with a bath for Nani and me. Then there was a sort of sitting room and dining room where all the group was to congregate. Then there was a long structure with 12 rooms. Two rooms had a joint bathroom, which consisted of a shower and a wash basin and a toilet. Each room had conveniences of night table and dressing table and cupboard and bed and mosquito curtains and everything. Everything was done complete, hot and cold, running water and flush toilets. I mean, there's so many things which you don't get in different places. Baba had it all just perfect in a nice long veranda, and then there was a roof where you could walk on the top at night, and a lovely garden. So Baba was very happy to show us everything. And such a surprise, because he kept it such secret, you see, because he wanted us to think that we were just going to go camping out there, you know. But later on when we were there, Baba said to us one day, I've given you now all the luxury. This is the luxury ashram. And later, one by one, I'm going to take all these things away from you. And in some respects, you might say, he did for some of us, those who went and stayed later on in Mehrabad. Because when we first arrived in Mehrabad, I can remember all I had in my corner was an old metal spring bed that was very rickety, and a bench in which to put my bag, and a sort of wooden box to put in odds and ends, and a broken piece of mirror. So Baba did carry out his word that he was going to take. But by that time, we didn't care whether we had all these things or didn't have them. So when we were in Nasik, Baba made us all promise we would stay 5 years. And in less than 5 months, one by one was being sent back to the West.
What was the life of the Nasik ashram? Baba also had the mustache ashram at Rahori.
Baba had the mustache ashram at Rahori and then Mehrabad. So Baba used to divide his time up between the three places. He would say so many days in Mehrabad. Then he would stop off, say maybe a night or so in Rahori to see his mus. And then he would come to Nasik, spend about a week there. And he had a nice little cabin room right near where the main house was. And Franny Rustam's wife used to cook all Baba's meals and Indian food and all. Baba never ate with us. And that way he would divide up his time between the three places. And then when Baba wasn't there, we all had a long list each individually of the things we had to do. And
daily duties,
and then Baba started giving us also fasting and silence. And I know the first time I fasted, I'd never fasted in my life before, and I had such a headache. And for instance, like my duties would be, like by that time Baba had started me on the chart, and had to work out the chart. Then I had to, we had Urdu lessons with Ramju. And that was really something fantastic, because everybody had a different idea of what having Urdu lessons meant, and poor Ramji was trying to be so patient. And instead of our accepting his teaching as if we were children and learning something like that, everybody had some questions which were irrelevant to the lesson. And like Narina wanted a few words so that she could talk to the cook. And Malcolm was one of these intellectual people that always wanted the grammatical reasons for everything. And by that time, I mean, one just practically didn't learn anything. And whenever Bobby used to come in and be with us, and he'd sit and listen to this session of Urdu, Bobby would just look at us and shake his head and say, I mean, this is hopeless. And Ani, poor Ramju, because of his love for Baba, put up with this nonsense of having to teach these Westerners that just acted like a... I mean, we should have accepted what he had to say without all this trying to bring in all these technical reasons of this and why this was spelled this way today and it's spelled differently to the next day and idiotic things like that. So we hardly learned anything, I mean, by doing that. Accepted what he had to say without all this trying to bring in all these technical reasons of this and why this was spelled this way today and it's spelled differently to the next day and idiotic things like that. So we hardly learned anything, I mean, by doing that.
Did Baba give any discourses?
Baba used to give talks, yes, sometimes, but then the trouble is what number were taken down, and not Kitty may have managed to take some down, because she and I think it was Nadine used to surreptitiously take out their pencils and papers to write down notes. But whenever Baba saw that, he never liked it, you know. Sometimes he would have stopped the talk, or at least make them, if he got engrossed in the talk, make them stop writing. So that's why very often sometimes some of Baba's talks were garbled by people not always remembering correctly what Baba said. But he used to, with the group there, I give quite a few talks when he used to come. Other times, then we'd have games with Baba, or just sit and talk, or one night we put on a fancy dress for him and got a prize, whoever was the best costume, or the one that was the funniest costume.
Baba does.
Oh, yes, Baba always liked that sort of thing. So, as I say, Kaka was the one who sort of helped to look after the household, though Narina at that time was supposed to be the sort of overseer of all. And Kaka's English was very limited, but every now and then Baba would tell Kaka that he must give us a speech. And then he'd admonish us all not to smile, not to laugh even, and that we should sit very serious and listen to Kaka's speech. So we would assemble in the dining room, and Baba would sit at one end of the table, the long table, and Kaka would be at the other, standing up and giving his speech. And it used to be beautiful, because it would be in this sort of stilted English, and very much to the point of how we should behave with the master, and no disgust, and so on and so forth. And Baba would sit and kind of shake with laughter over this talk, but we had to, Baba would give us a look in the eye, if at all even we dared smile, so we'd have to sit very seriously and absorb this very forceful talk of Kaka's, because he did it with such sincerity, and all the things he told us were so good, and for what a sort of greenhorns should know, and how to talk, or what respect they should have for their master, and not be this sort of haphazard Westerners that sort of flip things off with just anyhow as they liked. A number of times Kaka gave us talks. And when Baba wasn't there, we used to naturally do what all you young ones now do, and that is to want to hear Baba stories from those who had been with Baba. So naturally, we would get a hold of Kaka, we would get a hold of Chanji, we would get a hold of Adi Jr., whoever happened to be there with and staying at the ashram at the time. And we would get together in somebody's room down in the other building, and away from the main building, and talk not so late, say 10 o'clock, half past 10 in the night. And our idea of having a spree was to somebody'd buy some toffees or somebody'd get some sweet drinks, and then we'd sit and hear stories about Baba. Now, Narina and Elizabeth used to go to bed very early. Nani used to retire to her room But Narina always objected to my going down to the other house because she insisted on keeping the door locked, and then that meant that when I came back, she would have to unlock the door and let me in. So she remonstrated a number of times with me, and I didn't see why I should miss out on listening to Baba's stories. After all, I wasn't leading a wild life down there. I was trying to absorb as much as I could about Baba. And so I was very irked about this. So when Baba came one time to Nasik, I brought up the subject, and I said, after all, Baba, I'm a responsible person. And I said, if Narina leaves the door unlatched, I'll be very careful to lock it. And I need to disturb nobody. Otherwise, I can't climb through the windows. All the windows are shut there on the veranda. So I have to disturb somebody. And after all, I'm not so late. So Baba, after that, said yes, that I could stay out, and Narina should no more longer think about the front door, and that I would lock it. So after that, then I felt quite free to come and go and listen to Baba's stories.
How did you get along in the ashram? Were there many...
Oh, like any place where people of varied temperaments are together, there would often be clashes of temperament. Stupid things that were really not worth arguing or fighting about. But these clashes did occur, and very often, as anything, they would come to Baba's ears. And then Baba would have to straighten out and make each embrace the other and forget and start again. And I can remember, I mean, later on we learned to control our moods and all that, but in those days we were still egotistical enough, I suppose you call that, to think of oneself only. And if you felt moody, well, you just became moody. And sometimes you would do it maybe to get Baba's attention. And I don't know, it depends on the individual and the way they were. I can remember one time Kitty getting very moody, and Kitty disappeared. And nobody could find Kitty. We looked high and low over the whole compound and all the rooms in all the houses. Nowhere else could Kitty be found. And we know that Kitty wouldn't go off the property because we'd been given strict instructions that for a certain length of time we were not to leave the property. So at last somebody had the bright idea to look in this little grass hut which had been built for Baba, but whether Baba used it or not, I don't remember. And sure enough, there was Kitty in there, very moody and sulking. So she was coaxed to come back, and then Baba, of course, wooed her out of that mood, and she was all right. So when you see our dear Kitty these days now, with our happy mood, you'd never know that she had those moods in the early days. We all went through that soon somewhere or other. Sometimes it used to be just because one had such an overwhelming feeling for Baba that somehow you couldn't always express that. Take myself, for instance. If I felt something very much and I wouldn't want to give vent to it or show it, my only way of hiding it is to be abrupt and gruff with other people. So people used to think that I was a very sort of nasty-tempered individual, whereas really, underneath it all, I wasn't, but there was a surface thing to hide what I was feeling underneath, because I didn't like to express what I really felt about things.
Baba always sort of brought this out, didn't
he? Baba always...
He let things simmer to a moment, but then...
He'd always bring them out sooner or later. He'd always bring them out sooner or later. Now, one of the most first time, I'd say, I ever realized that Baba was more than just this flesh and blood that I could see, was that one night, must have been towards morning, I was awakened by seeing a blinding light. My heart was beating so fast. And in that light was Baba's face. And everything was twirling like sort of pinwheels of light going like this, radiating. But with that light and with that vision of Baba, there was such a feeling of ecstasy that I know it was no longer me. I felt as if I was being absorbed into that, so that I was not myself anymore, but just being absorbed into Baba. And then that light went. It's, yeah, I kept trying to recapture it.